Welcome to the Save or Die Podcast, a podcast about classical Dungeons and Dragons. If it's in a box, we'll talk about it.
Welcome back, folks. This is adventure number 4 for the Save or Die Podcast, as you heard, and welcome back. I have DM Liz and DM Mike sitting here with me, and I'm DM Vimps. How are you doing this week, Liz?
Well, doing pretty good. I'm starting back to school next week, so this is my last few days of relative freedom.
Back to school, back to school. Think of the Adam Sandler movie when he was going to school. And as you hear giggling in the background, DM Mike as always, Mike.
Giggling?
Yes.
Giggling? That makes me sound like a high school student or something.
Well, you do teach, so.
Shut up. Anyway. I'm doing okay, thanks for asking. And I start school next week and start teaching next week, too, so that's tons of fun.
Yay!
So you'll simultaneously be on both sides of the desk, so to speak.
That's right. That's right.
Sounds groovy. So yeah. What have we done classical lately? The first question we always ask each week. What have I done? I am actually planning a classical or classic D&D adventure for a local con I'm going to next week using Mentzer rules.
Woohoo!
So I've actually been doing something.
Not Mulzer?
No, I'm actually going to go with the Mentzer rules because I'm more familiar with those. Even though it's pretty much the same thing.
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah, essentially.
It really is.
And what about you guys?
Well, I'm continuing to read Maze of Peril. That's pretty much it for the classic stuff.
And Mike?
Other than reading the Fight On magazines.
Oh, which... yeah. We could put that as part of what we've done old school lately. We've read Fight On number 1 and number 9, but we'll talk about that later.
That's been it. Mostly just getting ready for classes. I haven't had a lot of time to really enjoy gaming goodness.
Yeah. I revamped the whole entire website, put up the new header graphic that Mike Moran gave us, and his other graphic for Facebook, which we're on Facebook. If you find us and add to the site, we'd appreciate that. We don't have
Milkman.
Yes, thank you. We don't have a URL for Facebook yet because I think you need a certain amount of people to get the URL, but we'll work on that and we'll get it. And you can visit saveordie.info for our website anytime and leave a comment. We appreciate all the comments that people have been leaving on the Frank Mentzer interview. A lot of people liked the interview and said they were a nice, relaxed interview and want to hear more from Frank. We will have Frank on again sometime, but we can't have too much Frank all the time. Otherwise, Frank won't feel special on the podcast. So,
there's no such thing as too much Frank.
Welcome to the Frank or Die podcast.
Yeah. TV's Frank.
No. Then I start singing Let Me Be Frank About Frank.
No, boy. Let's not reference MST3K.
You started it.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. Anyway, Liz, you're going to reach down that mailbag this week and see what we have.
Yes. Speaking of Milkman, we have a letter from Mike Moran.
Yay, Mike. And
he's talking about our coverage of the Dungeons & Dragons cartoon from Last Adventure. He says, funny thing you guys covered that. Anyway, out of the blue a few weeks ago, I was watching some episodes on YouTube and noticed that a comic book writer, Mark Evanier, worked on it. I asked him if he ever played D&D. He said he has never played it. That's all the info I got from him. I want to say I got my red box before the cartoon, but I think the cartoon made me play D&D more.
Cool.
And that's it from Mike Moran. Thank you very much for writing.
Definitely. And if you want to write in, what is our email address? saveordiepodcast@gmail.com. That's right. Give a little pause there for the people writing it down, you know?
Oh, okay.
Okay. So, I think that's going to wrap that up. We don't have any other emails or comments in the forums. Everybody was giving us some great reviews on the podcast, giving us some critique. I've been hanging a lot lately with on the Piazza forums. with Frank Mentzer, actually, I was asking him a lot of detailed questions about the Immortal box set, which he enjoys chatting about. So if anyone wants to, just look up those forums and join us in the fun, as it's now on 3 pages worth of detailed notes about Frank talking about dimensions and avatars. So you'd be spinning your head looking at some of the stuff he wrote. So game on this week. Game on. What are we going to talk about this week? Well, let's tackle something early on here in the classical realm of combat. How much different is combat from system to system? So let's start with the basic of Holmes. Liz, how is combat done in Holmes? Give us a quick rundown.
Okay, let's see. Where are my notes? I have no notes.
Well, while Liz is looking for her notes, I'll take a moment to go over the basic combat sequence, which is located in the Mentzer Player's Handbook, which I found kind of odd at first, but I guess it should be there because all players need to know how to play. Page 36 of the Red Book on the Player's Manual. Notice they call it manual, even though it's not really a manual. So each person will roll initiative 1d6 for each side, but instead it's the highest that wins first, as opposed to most games that have lowest, which is advanced. Which I noticed that Mike kept screwing up in our game, but anyway. And then we do morale checks if necessary, and then movement, and then we do missile fire, then magic spells, and then it's hand-to-hand combat. And then the side that lost initiative goes. And then the DM will handle all retreating, surrender, or other special results. Now, the only difference between Holmes, Liz, was what does the DM do differently?
Well, in Holmes, you figure out who gets the first blow by figuring out who has the highest dexterity. Character with the highest dex strikes first. The DM doesn't know the dexterity of, say, an attacking monster. He rolls it on the spot.
Oh.
And on the other hand, yet another caveat to that is if you achieve surprise or if you are attacking someone from behind, you always get the first blow. So even if they have a better dexterity, if you've surprised them or you're doing a successful backstab, then you go first regardless.
Hmm. And then is there any rules for surprise in Holmes other than... Because I know in the Mulvey Mentor, it was on a roll of 1 to 2 for a surprise action. Depending on which side rolled the 1 or 2, they would be surprised. I don't know if Holmes has a different system for doing surprise or not.
I think that's the same because that's directly from OD&D with Greyhawk.
Okay, and is there any difference with the little brown book, Mike, that you like to play?
Well, with Greyhawk, it's actually closer to the Mulvey Mentor in that you do the standard roll as far as determining initiative. And that's with Greyhawk. The original chainmail, that we'd have to give like an entire section just to describing that.
Well, you know, most people don't really play chainmail. I don't know too many people that play chainmail anymore, at least the original chainmail.
There's a few, very few diehards who really like it. But,
really?
You know, I never actually played it myself, so I shouldn't say, but it always struck me as great for what it is, which is basically a mass combat system. I don't know quite how great it would be. One thing I do remember is that hit dice, the way we use it in virtually all versions of D&D, in original, that was an attack factor.
Oh.
That was how many dice they rolled to attack, not how many hit points they had.
Hmm.
Which was a kind of, which certainly makes the term hit dice make a bit more sense, doesn't it?
Actually, it does.
So.
Interesting little theory there. The only chainmail, yeah. like I said in the past podcast, I've said was, I played the newer chainmail that Wizards of the Coast had put out in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
The remake, which but that was built based upon third edition rules, so
yeah. Did that have collectible minis, or was that just regular normal miniatures? It was just a minis line.
It was actually, you had to paint them yourself for one, which was kind of a pain in the butt itself.
Oh, horrors.
Hey, I'm like what Frank Mentzer said, actually, about how you can just go and buy the mini and just play with it, and that's the end of it.
To be honest, I guess it depends. For individual figures, I think most people I've gamed with, a figure for a character, they want to paint it themselves. But, yeah, you know, you need a dozen orcs, grab some plastic orcs and go for it. I mean, considering, I believe, the reason for the Rust Monster looking so weird... Mm-hmm. Was that Gary had originally basically just had a little bag of those cheapo plastic creatures that, you know, you buy like 100 for a buck back in the 70s. And he grabbed one of those and stuck it out there and said, okay, that's a Rust Monster. And then it basically looked like that. It just happened to be the weirdo figure he pulled out.
Interesting. I remember hearing that somewhere, but I wasn't sure if that was actually true. Cool.
No, it's true. It is true.
You know what the best monsters are to use at the gaming table?
Mm.
Cheetos or M&M's. Because then when you kill it, you get to eat it.
I could see that with M&M's, but I think Cheetos leave a lot of cheese powder around.
Well, all right. Cheesy poofs, then.
Cheesy poofs.
Yeah. They're a little sweet. Small. Yeah. No, don't do that. All right, so we've talked about the differences in combat. There really is not much of a difference, and it's very simple to go through combat.
Can I intercede?
Go ahead.
One other thing. I do not believe that Holmes has a morale system either, does it?
Well, let's see.
I don't remember hearing anything about a morale system either for the Holmes edition.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think there really is. I mean... As far as possibly surrendering or something, as far as I remember, it's, you know, a losing combatant may surrender. His opponent doesn't have to accept it.
Like Murray the Mage.
Yeah, or if you run away, attacker gets a bonus of +2 with a free swing, you know, but... Yeah, there's really nothing as far as checking on morale to see if they're going to run away or if they're going to surrender. I guess that's DM's call, depending on how he feels the...
Yeah, a free attack on a running character. Would that be an attack of...
Don't say it.
Possibility?
Yeah. Okay, thank you. That's an AOP?
Yeah, an AOP.
Anyway, actually, I've never used the morale system. I actually hate the fact that you have to leave it up to a die to do it. I mean, what if you're in the heat of a fight, you're gonna do that morale check and they run? I mean, no. I do it based upon the combat, what happens during the combat. So
obviously, there's no way to know. It would have been a good question to ask Frank, but I can't help but think that the morale system was probably there more as just a guideline for the DM. Who may not be aware of the fact that maybe orcs are less likely to retreat than, say, kobolds.
Aww.
Your little
puppies. Use the morale, I guess, number as a general gauge. Or how diligent did they expect people to use it or not?
Well, as we know, there are people that say, well, that's the number, that's what I'm going to do out there.
It's in the rules.
Yes, those are the by-the-book people. Nothing wrong with those people. They just like to keep it pure and simple. And then we have the laid-back people that are just like, meh, whatever.
Yeah. Well, I don't mind people, you know, by-the-book and ruling. Just understand that winging it is just as valid as running a BTB game.
I believe in some of the rules. I don't know if it was the Mulvey rules or the Mensa rules or even the Holmes. It's just... You know, don't get too crazy about the rules, and if an argument breaks out, stop the game for a few minutes, let everybody relax, and just get back into the game and not worry about it. I don't know which rules say that. I remember reading that somewhere.
I know Holmes does.
So there you go. Maybe that's where I read it then.
Speaking of Holmes, I just found part of my notes. As far as initiative, well, not initiative, but order of combat.
Right.
I wrote down here that, according to the Holmes Basic, if a magic user says he's getting a spell ready, magic spells go off first.
Oh.
This is followed by missile fire, if the distance permits, and then melee is joined.
Okay.
Movement, so, magic, missile, and melee.
Well, he's doing magic before movement, right?
He doesn't specifically list movement, does he?
No, actually.
No. There was an example, you know, party of adventurers, giant spider, and according to how the example went, the magic spell goes off first, and then the missile fire, and then melee is joined. After that, no more missile fire, because, well, in your games, Mike, you know, you say you can fire missiles, but there's a chance you might hit your party. According to Holmes, it is not permitted because of the danger of hitting friendly forces. So Holmes just says, you can't do it. Let people be stupid enough to try.
Well, for a basic, very basic intro game, that's probably mm-hmm. the wisest. But yeah, I mean, I really like the AD&D, you know, 1 in 6 chance, boom. Which I import in all my games. So
yeah, apparently.
Whether it's Classic or Castles and Crusades or whatever.
All right. So, speaking about combat, let's talk about missile attacks. How about the people that have? Well, we're talking about more advanced level characters here that have more than one shot per round or per turn, we'll say. How would you guys handle that? Do you allow them to just do their attacks right up at once, boom, or are you going to do one at the beginning, one at the end? What's going to start with Mike?
I'm lazy. I just let him go in and do the two shots.
Just bang, who cares?
Bang, bang, yeah.
Just keep it simple so you don't have to worry about it?
Pretty much.
Okay. And Liz?
I would do it one at the beginning, one at the end.
Do you allow them to say, okay, so you're doing one in the beginning, one in the end. Let's say he kills the creature and the first shot, but then the second shot, you go by the rule of, or you already called it, you have to shoot it, even though there's nothing there.
If there's another opponent, I would let them change for the second shot, because, I mean, unless you're knocking both arrows simultaneously and firing, there's going to be a couple of seconds where you put the second arrow to the string, pull, and release. I think you would probably notice if your first opponent had fallen by that time, and you could move over to get the guy next to him.
Especially if he fell because of the arrow you shot the first time.
So, yeah, I would let them change targets.
Well, I would actually do a similar system to you, one in the beginning and one at the end, but I'm going by the old traditional rules of, oh, well, you just wasted an arrow, because I think that makes it a little more realistic, in my opinion. So, I mean,
You're wrong, but that's okay.
So that's how we would handle Melissa. Yeah, Melissa. That's how we handle Melissa. Yeah. I don't even know a Melissa. So any Melissa out there listening, hey, that one was for you, baby. all right. So do you guys go when we do combat? Now I know the Mulvey Mentor rules, and a lot of people skip this step. And do you have people call out at the beginning of the round before they roll initiative what they want to do? Liz.
I probably should, but I'm too lazy and I don't.
You don't? Okay. And Mike, I know for a fact, playing in your games, you do have people call out what they're doing beforehand.
It's actually been a fairly recent thing.
Oh, really?
I'd say, like, a year ago, I didn't. But the more I've tried it, the more I like it as a DM, because it really requires the players to think ahead of time.
Yeah.
And not just waiting. You know, they can immediately react to however the combat situation has changed. And especially if you're getting a spell ready, that doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I'm going to make them call their actions before we roll that D6, because that's a little more realistic if you're preparing a spell or an arrow or you're going to charge someone. It just seems a little more fair that way. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
Random encounters.
Alright, so random encounters. Mike, what do we have for random encounters this week?
We have the non-player character adventuring party. As a possible encounter, it was mentioned mm-hmm. in the original books and I think in Holmes as well, but it seems I've rarely found a group or a dungeon master that uses it. And I don't know why, really, because it's so obvious. Why, this group of people are the only people in this entire area that has decided to get drunk and go into a dungeon, and that would be a good idea to kill things and take their stuff? Nah.
No, that's true. I mean, I've used adventuring, NPC adventuring parties, maybe not a full party, but I've used one or two NPCs here and there that just bump into the party. And then they'll try to hook up with the party, or then try to steal things from the party, or maybe backstab somebody for money. Or maybe they just find a really good ally.
Like Frank Mincer's Honey of a Cleric in the Mincer Basic set, huh?
Yeah, like that one, yeah. Liz, do you use NPC adventuring parties at all? Or?
Not terribly often, because, like Mike, I tend to do first-person DMing, and it's difficult for me to do conversations between two NPCs and switch back and forth between characters just at the drop of a hat. I get very stiff and think I sound stupid, so I try to keep my NPC characters who show up to maybe only one or two at a time, if at all possible, if there's going to be any conversations going on, because that's really one of my weak points, and I don't do it very well. So I almost never do an entire party of NPCs showing up and interacting.
Schizo time.
Yeah. You don't sit there, the fighter comes up and says, "What do you want?" And then the magic user goes, "I don't know what they want, but they look kind of scary," and do the voices like that.
And then have them arguing, and you're basically the DM playing an argument among three NPCs and being all three of them. Yeah, that's
always classic.
Yeah, but I'm crap at it, so I don't do it very often.
You just don't DM enough.
So, matching our NPC party, do we plan it or do we random roll it? And if we plan it, do we try to match them up to the party so maybe we get a thief in there to do sneaky things or what? I kind of like to, when I do an adventuring party to run into the party, I kind of want to match them up somehow so there's not that power struggle. Because I have one player in my group that always likes to intimidate other NPCs. He plays the large, burly guy with the long hair, ponytail, beard, and muscular fighter that intimidates and wants to get as much gold as possible type guy.
So, of course, you're making the assumption that any NPC adventuring party they run into will want to join with them.
True. They may not want to. They may want to just make them surrender their stuff and leave them naked in the middle of the field.
Yep.
That's
especially
also
if they're higher level.
Yeah, that's possible.
Which is another question. Do you tend to create those NPC adventuring parties and anticipate they'd be roughly the same level as the NPCs, lower, higher?
I don't know. I usually would make them around the same level, maybe a level lower, a level higher, the same level. I try not to be too advanced on that. But Liz,
yeah, I mean, that makes sense. You're not going to run into a 10th level fighter in the Caves of Chaos.
Hey, you never know. He could be farming.
Yeah, he's bored and just decided to go clear it all out by himself, which he could do.
If it was an MMORPG, he'd be doing that every day.
Yep.
Perhaps he's there looking for his little brother.
Oh.
And that's what Briark means. It means, oh crap, it's the 10th level fighter again.
Or, I was thinking of a nice scenario that we find in those things. Maybe those NPC parties are setting up a trap for adventuring parties on the side of the road. kind of that whole use the female NPC in distress and to come over, and then when the party comes over to help, boom, the NPCs jump out and like, give me all your gold or we're going to kill you. And no, I'm not the macho man.
The best, of course, is the ones who decide to wait for the party to come out, anticipating they're going to be weakened, wounded, and then hit them with the, okay, thanks for giving us getting all that stuff out for us.
That would be a good adventure to get yourself a good evil nemesis character. You send the party off to find the mysterious book inside the haunted mansion, and this evil character wants this book and tells the characters he'd pay them double for it, but then they were just like, no, we're giving it to the old guy because we're cool and good. So he's like, I'll get you, my pretties. And then they go inside the haunted mansion. Then they get the book, and they're wiped, and they pretty much come out of there. And then he kicks their butt and takes the book and runs away. And then that's a whole other adventure right there.
True. Very true.
Boom, boom, boom.
Boom.
So what are other ways we can do this?
Well, then the problem becomes, and keep in mind I have not seen the Master or Immortal sets, but I don't think there is a given system to come up with a NPC party on the spur of the moment, kind of like the tables in the back of the DM's guide.
Oh,
for 1E.
I don't think there's random things like that, but they do give examples of characters in there, so I mean, you could always just jot those things down. I mean,
yeah, on the cuff. Or you could actually even plan ahead of time by coming up with a couple of parties and then just keeping them on hand for whenever that role is made. Okay, it's this group. You know.
I really, to be 100% honest, I don't know too many people that go beyond, let's say, companion level. Or is it companion level 14 and up?
Yeah, to 25, I think.
Yeah, I don't really know too many. I mean, I've heard of a couple groups of people playing for like 5 or 6 years, the same campaign, but it's like, yeah, I got my 14th level fighter, and we finally retired him, and
yeah, that's generally what I always did. I mean, there was one campaign that was specifically run from the get-go as a high-level one.
Yeah, other than that,
no, I
know people bought the box sets, but I don't know how many people actually used, say, the Master set. I know people that use the Immortal set. I used it in my group, but we didn't actually really take our characters to level 36 and then take the path of the Immortalhood.
We just started immortal.
Yeah, we just kind of took our characters and said, ha, they're immortals.
Which, yeah, I mean, if you want to play the Immortal game, well, let's all sit here at first level and work for the next 6-7 years. Now we can actually play Immortals, but I don't care anymore, you know?
I'm sure the guys back in the TSR offices actually probably had a campaign that did that for them. Or there's probably a bunch of old guys sitting around right now who are on level 36 going, my character is finally going to become an immortal. And they're just smoking their pipe with their long beards and hair and everything. I mean,
now
I'm
get
sure.
Off my lawn.
Get off my lawn, you damn kids. And I'm sure there is groups like that. And I'm sure someone will email when they eventually hear this. Hello, future people. And they will tell us all about it, because I'd like
and
to hear.
And I will salute them and their diligence.
I would actually, if I had a prize, give it to them, but I don't have a prize right now, so.
Oh, we could do it like the old Marvel used to do, the no prize.
Oh, that'd be awesome. We can do our own save or die no prize.
Yeah.
Perfect.
The
Anybody?
Prize is a free saving throw in your next encounter.
There we go.
Yeah.
I'll talk to our resident artist, Mike, and see if he can design something up real quick.
As like a little coupon or something?
Yeah, like a little, like the Marvel No Prize that everybody forgot about, which I also forgot about, too. And it was probably the silliest thing that Stanley used to give to people, but it was fun.
Yeah.
Just to get that envelope to say you had that.
Had the No Prize.
Yeah, it was nothing except for the envelope and the No Prize inside of it, but to say that you actually had that thing was more than anything in the world, so there you go. You tell us how long your campaign's gone. If you've gone from level 1 to immortalhood, or you've been playing for 9, 10, 20 years, however long, that was a joke, you never know.
Well, no, I was just laughing at the jump. 9, 10, 20.
You know, you double, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
I'd be interested to hear how you guys started, when you started, and if you're still playing the same exact character, and what your character's like, and what box set you're on, and what roles you play. Every time I think about a character in High Level retiring, I keep thinking of that movie. I can't think of the name of it, but it was kind of like a mockumentary, and it was about some guy who was really big into like D&D, but it wasn't really D&D because they couldn't use it because they didn't have the rights to use it. But the guy held a party in his backyard for retiring his character, and like had his whole family there, and they were just like, "Why are we here?" It's like,
I've never seen that.
It's but not
it sounds
that great.
Fun.
It's not that great. The guy's like, "We've been playing for like 12 years, and today I'd like to take the opportunity to say my character, who's the 14th circle of the blah blah blah, is retiring today." And his parents are like, "What's wrong with him? Where did we go wrong?" I can't think of the movie, but I do. I will post it up. But it's one of those. I think it's called Gamers. It's called Gamers, or the
Gamers. Is that
Gamer.
The French one?
No. It's an American one. I don't like it overall, but it follows around four guys that have been playing their system, which is D&D, for like, I don't know, 15, 20 years. One guy has no job. One guy works as a telemarketer. Another guy just like kind of loafs around. Yeah, whatever.
Well, we like bad movies, so, you know.
I've only really found one really good movie that mocks D&D really well in playing groups, and that's Gamers of Darkness Rising.
Mm-hmm.
Or the original.
Dead Gentleman?
Yeah. That one is great. Even the first one they had before that called Gamer was pretty good. I don't know. I'm probably confusing the names, but that one was really good, too.
That one was The Gamers, and then there was The Gamers 2, Darkness Rising. I remember I liked the first one, but when they put out the second one, I thought, no way, this is going to stink, because they've done all the good jokes, and then it got in, and it was good. It was really good.
They did a lot of good jokes in that thing.
And it even had a story in it, which was a little better than the first one. So.
Yeah, the first one just kind of blasted on gamers entirely, and
I wish they'd had more of the people from the first one in the second one, but you know, I understand scheduling and that sort of thing.
I like when the warrior looks at his character sheet in the first one, and he's like, he's like, intelligence of 4? Oh, that's absurd. I have a higher intelligence than that.
Give me a pen.
Yeah, and then he changes it. That's great. Good times. All right, so I think we've bashed Random Encounters enough this week. And that'll put us into our last segment of the week. Products of Your Imagination.
These Dungeons & Dragons games. Products of Your Imagination.
So this week, in Products of Your Imagination, we have gotten a preview of Fight On Magazine, because we had not addressed it in our list of things to pick up in one episode. I don't remember what adventure that was.
I think it was one or two.
And
we were talking about various.
Yeah, things. We talked about Noxspell Magazine and different, and I think Encounter Magazine. But the owner, or the publisher, I should say, what was his name again, guys? It fails me right now, this moment.
Ignatius Umlaut.
Thank you. He was listening, and he's like, "Hey, what about my magazine?" Well, I believe Mike addressed that in the website. He didn't acknowledge it for the simple fact that we'd have never actually looked at it, so.
And I'd been under the impression that it was more of a general old school magazine rather than quote-unquote classic D&D, which it technically is, but apparently it's like still about 70-80% stuff that might as well be classic D&D.
Yeah, and then he went on to give us, I don't know where it came from. Did he give us issue 1, or did someone else give us issue 1?
No, he gave us issue 9, and then offered issue 1 for comparison.
Okay, so then he offered us issue 9 to review, and then he gave us a preview copy of issue 1, because he wanted us to see what it was all about, and to spread the word, because it's a great magazine. Mm-hmm. But I do want to say that I did like the earlier issue, number one, because, well, it is smaller, which it's easier to read, but... And it did seem to focus a little bit more on D&D itself than anything else, which I kind of... That's my whole purpose of wanting to buy the magazine. And then when it came to issue number 9, it seemed like they really jumped it up to 119 pages, was it, guys?
120, yeah, something like.
Which is great for the buck. It's, I mean, $9.99, you get a printed book, not a PDF, and you get it delivered to your house and everything. And it goes over a lot of stuff. It gives you sample maps, sample dungeons, characters, NPCs. They go over philosophies. They go into this, into that. And it's not just D&D in there. I think there was some Hackmaster in there, I believe, too, right?
I don't recall.
I think I saw something on Hackmaster. They talk about first edition in it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's got all the old school games you can possibly think of in that magazine crammed into the 120 pages. And they have nice artwork. I definitely have to give nice artwork, nice writing, nice layout. I think the only thing I was a little concerned about is why they were not calling things like, you know, we normally are used to, like fighter. They were called warrior. And
yeah, they had their own kind of house system.
Yeah, which we all know what it refers to, but...
Yeah, defensive class, we all know his armor class, and, you know, hits his hit points, etc., etc. And that threw me a little bit off, and I can understand why they don't want to mess with the OGL and all that, but, it's... I guess, for my own comfort level, I probably would have found it less jarring if they had had the normal tones or the normal terms in.
Well, that was,
but I can understand.
That was the one thing that threw me off in the beginning when I was looking at it. I'm like, what's DC? Oh, man, defensive class. Okay, it took me a few seconds to realize. But
the numbers are the same. I mean,
yeah. And I was thinking to myself, well, why don't they just print it under the open gaming license and probably for legal reasons they decided not to.
Yeah. I also noticed that at least some of them, the DC was 10 on, you know, for unarmored, which is technically more AD&D and not basic. But, you know, that's easily jiggered in the mind.
Right, as we all know, that 9 was the starting no armor base for basic.
Right.
Or classic, I should say. Which we'll get into another episode about the reasons why they did that. That's for another time, another debate. And so, Liz, what did you think of Fight On Magazine?
I also preferred issue 1 over issue 9. I think most of my preferences, though, are because looking through a lot of the articles for 1, it just had that feel more to it of the classic D&D.
Yeah.
Especially the creepies and crawlies. You've got things like the Thauma Grudge, the Spotted Skeptic, the One-Armed Gundar. You know, it just had that sort of tongue-in-cheek kind of, you know, nudge-nudge, wink-wink sort of feel to it that a lot of the really old stuff from the late 70s, early 80s, or mid to late 70s, you know, just seemed to have. And Space Wizards, and the first thing I thought of was Steve the Alien and Blackmore.
Yeah.
Because you've got alien corpses, which enhance the powers of the magic user. It's like, oh, that is so cool. which is not to say that Fight On number 9 is not good. It is very good. Mm. However, it's got more of that... It's got more of a serious tone to it, which I will be the first to admit probably 9 out of every 10 gamers are going to want that over the goof. Mm. But I liked the old-style feel of the goof in issue number 1.
Yes. And
so... That's my reasons. Any issue of Fight On, I think, would be a great resource for players and DMs alike. You know, spells and stuff that you can incorporate into your game for magic users, for priests, you know, different things that you can put in to give your own flavor to your campaign, apart from what's offered in the standard books. It's good stuff.
Wild and crazy stuff, yes.
Well, yeah, I kind of know what you mean, because I was trying to think of comparisons, and Fight On number one felt like, to me, like the old Judges Guild Dungeoneer magazine.
Yeah, okay.
Even with the alliterations of the titles and stuff. Whereas I'd say issue 9 felt more like Silver Age Dragon magazine, when it was Dragon, not the Dragon. And I mean that in the best possible way. It was huge. It was full of lots of stuff. If I had paid money for it, rather than just us giving review copies, I would be thrilled with 120 pages of material.
Yeah, that's pretty
really
big.
Because when I originally heard the cost, it's like $9.99 for an issue of a magazine. That's a bit much. But at 120 pages, I mean, that's great.
I think that's a bit more than the standard magazine, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't picked up a standard magazine in so long. Wasn't Dragon, when it was canceled, like around $7 or $8?
Yeah, around there, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, considering they're going through Lulu, that's another reason it's probably as high as it is. But yeah, I mean, it felt like they really got a good thing going there. Like I said, my only gripe is it would, for my own personal comfort level, I'd prefer the traditional terminology, but that is a very minor gripe.
Well, and the other thing that kind of confused me, and we talked about this before the podcast, was the dedication page in the beginning.
Yeah.
The first one had a dedication to Gary Gygax, which is very nice. We all...
Oh, yeah.
And then this one had a dedication to, what was the author's name?
Paul Jackways.
And
I immediately thought, is he dead too?
And I thought maybe he passed on. And I'm like, wait a minute. No, I remember reading something. And then you guys are like, well, we just saw him.
So at the North Texas RPG Con.
I know they
did. That was a couple of months ago, but...
I know they didn't write, you know, born and died, but it still confused me, really, when I looked at it. I'm like, oh my god, he's dead? When I first saw it, and then I realized it wasn't, but it just kind of threw me off.
Psych!
I know you can dedicate pages to people and stuff like that, but I just didn't realize it when I first saw it. I was like, ah!
Maybe if we had read, you know, issues 2 through 8 before hitting 9, it wouldn't have been quite of a segue jump for us.
Yeah, probably. Mm-hmm. So $9.99, you can go to fightonmagazine.com, and then you can follow the link, and you can purchase it. They are also, I believe, they look for submissions as well, and I don't know how they work it. Maybe they pay you per work, or then maybe they pay you based upon how many magazines are being sold. I'm not really sure. I'm sure that's the stuff you'll be discussing when you talk to the editors of the magazine. But give them a look. Bang for your buck. $9.99 for 120 pages, definitely worth it. If issue 1 was $9.99 for, what, 32 pages? I don't know about that. I'm sure it wasn't for sale for $9.99 at the time. I think we saw it was like $6 or $5.
Mm-hmm.
I probably would have paid $9.99 just for the puns and the cool stuff. But it's an acquired taste, I'll admit, but I'd think it was well worth the money.
Okay. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I also want to point out, if you do submit to Fight On, authors and artists retain copyright to their own work, so you're not giving it up to the magazine if you submit something. You get to keep it. That's pretty cool, too, I think.
Oh, yeah. Maybe they do it like Knoxville Magazine used to do, that if you submit it, it's your work, you don't really get paid for it.
Right, but you get the publication credit.
Right, maybe they do it for just publication credit, because I know putting stuff on Lulu is pretty expensive, so...
Yeah.
They probably make little to no profit off of doing it, which is admirable, I mean, you know.
Yeah,
so not everybody in the old school Renaissance is here to make a buck off of everyone else's stuff. I'm sick of seeing that, and we're seeing it more and more of these people trying to make a buck off of what these guys did back in the day, and it's really starting to piss me off. So
yeah, yeah, it's you too can earn hundreds of dollars a year in the lucrative field of game design.
Well, I understand if you want to make a module and you want to sell it, but at least offer the PDF for free.
Yeah.
And then say, well, here for my hard work, here's the book copy. I'm charging the little price with like another dollar or two for my hard work. If you want to buy it, buy it. Here's the freebie. There it is.
Yeah, well, it's like all the articles I wrote for Crusader Magazine. I turned around, and when they were putting up a SRD for the CNC rules, I told them, just prompt, you know, print them. I don't care. You know, as long as people get them, I don't, you know, yeah. I don't need any money for them. And I'd rather have people using stuff that might be useful.
Well, my whole reason for doing these podcasts, and everybody knows, some people listening will probably know me from another podcast, which I won't mention the name because I don't like to cross things over. But my whole reason is to promote the OSR, to get it out there, to get new players in there, and get them revived and playing, get them away from that stupid 4th edition. I don't care. I don't like 4th edition. Yeah. The edition that shall be named, there. And
we didn't say 4th edition what.
Yeah,
so
that's yeah, it could be Hackmaster. Yeah, that's it.
Right.
It could be Legends of the Five Rings. Yeah.
Yeah. Shadowrun.
Yeah.
Are they?
Yeah, they're up there. Okay. And, yeah, so I'd rather see someone... Like, I love poking in emails and or on a forum and someone's like, hey, guys, I'm, like, 15 years old and I used to play 3.5 Pathfinder, but I just found Labyrinth Lord and I read through it last night and I stayed up all night and it was awesome and I just can't wait to bring it to my group and play. And I love reading that.
Yeah, because... us old farts aren't getting any younger.
That's right. We need to get the new generation into gaming. Or, yeah. I'm sure, Mike, when you open up our email and you see someone, right, like, you know, I just found the podcast and I just started playing Classic again, you're probably sitting yourself, all right, like one of those. You get kind yes. of one of those pump moments. No, really.
No, yeah, I'm being completely serious.
Oh, okay. And, though there was a question, speaking of books and everything, that someone addressed to me and I brought up to you about the gray book that is floating around on 4Shared. Remember we had discussed this in emails?
Yeah, I flipped through it.
Let's take a second to describe it first. First of all, it's called Dungeons & Dragons Gray Book. It has the Holmes cover, but in gray. Like a gray like shade to it. And then it has the TSR logo like normal. And then the inside has a Wizards of the Coast logo and copyright. So I was kind of confused on it. And I had to write Mike about it. And he and I both poured through it, and it just looks like someone decided to edit through it and just take their rules that they wanted from basic and advanced and just mishmash it together.
Yeah. He may have had in mind when doing it, you know, what going ahead and taking basic to, rather than going directly to AD&D, just kind of maybe grafting the AD&D ideas onto basic. I haven't delved in it that deep. But if anyone has details on this, or if they played it, you know, please call it, you know, write in. Tell us.
Yeah, definitely. SaveOrDiePodcast@gmail.com. Let us know what you think about it. It's on 4Shared. If you just type in Gray Book, it comes up right away. And I can't think of the editor's name. It's Steven something, but Siegel.
Ends?
That's it. Steven Ends. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
I mean, he did a great job in editing it, but I just wasn't sure what his focus was exactly on what, if he was just mishmashing things to get it out there, or, I mean, he can't legally sell it or anything, because it's basically everything just mishmashed in together, how they wrote
correct.
It back then.
Yeah. Although he is sure to put, you know, copyright Wizards of the Coast.
Yeah, covering himself for Wizards of the Coast, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. So if you want something reviewed or looked at, you can give us a holler. I put a nice little graphic up on our website of the wizard, little bubble saying, you want us to review your product? And you can click and send us an email, and we'll take a look at something. Maybe you want a module that you're working on that you want to get out there for people to know about. We'll take a look at it, and if you send us like a little preview of it. In fact, next week when we come back, we'll be reviewing, I believe, a module that someone sent us to review to get out there. For Classic rules.
Blood Moon Rising.
Blood Moon Rising, thank you. And we'll be reviewing that next week in detail, breaking that down, and not giving away the hints and secrets, but just our overall thoughts about it. So if you want to do it, just give us an email. But to
so
we're
going to give a dragon rating to Fion Magazine?
I was just about to say that.
Oh, sorry.
I was about to say, to wrap up this segment, the our standard now of giving dragon ratings. Liz, what's your overall dragon rating of Fion Magazine?
Overall dragon rating? Is it like out of five dragons?
Yes, one to five.
Okay, one to five. I'll give it a 4.5 dragon rating.
Wow, Liz throwing out the dragons this week.
That's right. Take now, that.
That's right. And Mike, how many dragons are you going to give it? Mike thinking long and hard about this one as he's sitting there staring at the wall.
Well, I'm trying to decide between 4.5 and 5.
Ooh, Mike going with the big ratings this week too.
Yeah, I'm sitting here going, well, a 5 should be perfect.
Right.
And it's like, well, what's not perfect about this? And I'm like, well...
Well, you had minor complaints, so it can't be a 5 to be...
Yeah, I'll go with a 4.5, though.
All right. And I'm going to go with 4.
Okay.
Ooh, stingy Vince.
That's right.
Stingy Vince.
I'm a hard reviewer on things, and... While it's a great magazine, and I tell everyone to jump over to the website, fightonmagazine.com, and purchase a copy right away just to see what it's like, I just have my minor problems and details with it. But other than that, it's a well put together. It looks like a professional. I shouldn't say it looks like. It is a professional magazine. It's not the run-of-the-mill crap thrown together by some guy sitting in his basement scratching his butt. And we all
know. What is exactly put out by a guy sitting in his basement scratching his butt, Vince?
I don't know.
Stuff.
But it's not that. I don't know what it is, but it's not that.
But it ain't that.
And I've seen fan magazines online. It looked like some guy just sloppily threw it together. And this is not a sloppily thrown. It looks like as if... I'm going to say it's going to look like as if TSR maybe hired someone as a third party to put the magazine together for them back in the day.
Okay.
Fair enough. So that's going to wrap up that for this week. And we'll, now it's time to cue the sad music.
Another episode gone. Adventure gone.
As we're wrapping up Adventure 4 and you hear the sad dun, 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 which is kind of funny because I was in the forums and people who never listened to the podcast before listened to the Frank Mentzer interview and they're like, why are they playing the Hulk theme in the end? And my comment back was, well, since you've never listened to the podcast before, go back and listen to Adventure number 1 and we'll explain
why.
You'll
find out. So there.
There.
Yeah. So, how many XP do we get for this adventure?
Let's see. XP for this adventure, 100.
Oh, good. I'll make up for that 50 I lost last time.
That's right, you did lose. Now you're at 50. Liz is at 150, and I'm at 1 million.
It's a fair cop.
Yeah.
I think so. So, we're going to say goodbye to you folks this week, and you can join us next week for Save or Die Podcast. Adventure number 5, where we take on some awesome stuff and we review more awesome stuff and we just plan on be awesome.
Yeah.
Have a good night, everybody. Oh, yeah, that's right. And our catchphrase is run or hide and
run while you still can.
Run while you still can. Yeah. Can you make the save? Good night, everybody.
Good night.